The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content. This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Network. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of federal marketing. Now, your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on the Federal News Network. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here today with a friend and a topic that we probably, I don't think I've ever had a whole show about capture before, but Jennifer Namvar, the CEO of the Peerless Group, is an expert in capture, and she's done some extraordinary things. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark.
So let's start off with a little background on you, please. So tell us who you are, where you came from, and why you started the Peerless Group.
Sure. So my name is Jennifer Namvar. I'm the founder and CEO of the Peerless Group. And I come from a 20-year background in the federal government contracting space, solely focused in business development, primarily in capture management, and prior to that in proposal management. So I've never been on the delivery side, and I've been living and breathing federal capture management and proposals my entire career, both in the defense space as well as the federal civilian space. And I've worked for some of the largest prime companies in the IT and professional services space throughout my career. I've also got some exposure to some other areas as well more recently, but the reason I started the Peerless Group is because capture management is a very challenging and fun position, and it's also very difficult to find good capture talent. So I saw a need in the marketplace for individuals like myself with a lot of experience working on large, complex captures, and I decided to go out and start my own consulting company.
Cool. And when was that?
So I started the Peerless Group about 2 years ago. After I left my most recent company, which is one of the large primes.
Okay. So your website, choosepeerless.com, has some very interesting stuff on it, one of which is a downloadable cheat sheet. And we're going to go through some of that right now, or maybe all of it, depending on how much time we actually end up with. So I hear a lot of people talk about capture. And I'm not sure what their background is, but it seems to be reflective mostly of a BD process, not necessarily a capture process. So talk to me about the difference here. Where do we start? So like opportunity fundamentals was the first on the cheat sheet.
Yeah, and I just want to give a little bit of background on the cheat sheet too. Created that document for capture managers, but it can also be used by VPs of business development or CEOs of smaller companies. It has a variety of intended audiences, and it's really kind of a starter kit for capture management, or if you're already an experienced capture manager, maybe just a sanity check. So I kind of thought of it like when you are taking your car into like a Jiffy Lube or something like that, and you get the X number point inspection. I forget how many points there are. But it really comes down to the same thing when you're looking at an opportunity. I boil it down to 11 points that I think you need to look at for each and every opportunity and kind of do a deep dive into those to just do an assessment of the health of your capture efforts.
Cool. Well, I love that. So give us a sample or the full run of your fundamentals for opportunities.
Sure. The 11 points that I focus on are understanding of the opportunity fundamentals, which I think you asked me about just now, we'll get into. Also the acquisition timing and your capture progress against that timing, your corporate capabilities to win, customer intelligence, having solid customer relationships, teaming, or as I call it, building the dream team, competitive intel, resources to bid on the RFP, your winning solution, PTW and pricing strategy, and leadership buy-in. So those are the 11 points that are found on my cheat sheet. And I kind of go deep into each of those 11 points. And I know we can't go over all of those today, Mark, but happy to hit on some of the highlights.
Let's do some highlights then. So those are the highlights for the opportunity fundamentals, right?
Yeah, those are the highlights for the whole cheat sheet. For the opportunity fundamentals, you want to be looking at things like, do you have an understanding of the basic opportunity, like who is the customer? And that means, not just who is receiving the services, but which contracting shops, where is it coming out on, which contract vehicles, what's the timing, and what are some of the other milestones, like the industry day, the draft, the final RFP, et cetera. Do you know if it's going to come out full and open or set aside? What's the contract type? And things like that are very important. Obviously, you need to know that just to have any kind of basic understanding of the opportunity. I think most people are already tracking that.
Okay, shall we migrate to timing?
Yeah, timing. One of the big pitfalls I see is that a lot of companies don't start early enough on their capture efforts. And I think that's one of the biggest drivers of success because if you don't start early, you don't have time to do things like shaping the requirements with the government and understand who the competition is or get the right teammates in place before the RFP comes out or do basic proposal readiness. So it's really important to get started early. And if you're too late, sometimes you just have to no bid.
Yeah, when I speak at APMP, I haven't done it for a few years, but in the teens, I spoke there at the annual NCA conference pretty much every year. A common refrain was the customer doesn't know us. Now, that's part of what you're going to take care of during that timing issue, correct?
Yes, absolutely. So you have that time to meet with the customer either in person or through, face-to-face meetings with the customer through calls, Teams calls or Zoom calls, through one-on-ones with the customer, putting together white papers with recommendations on the acquisition strategy, things like that. So that's why it's imperative to get started early.
Okay. Now on that end as well, and I will probably throw this out a couple of times during this interview, do you recommend or do you practice reaching out through LinkedIn to these people prior to the quiet period?
Yes. So depending on if they are active on LinkedIn or not, and a lot of them are, I find it's an effective strategy to tag them in LinkedIn posts. If you're taking a picture, for example, if you're at an event where they're on a panel or something, tagging them, or you can even DM them and ask them questions or follow up with them after you've met with them. So I do think that that can be an effective strategy.
Okay, cool. You did this when you were at your large integrator. So how long have you been leveraging LinkedIn to do this? Just curiosity.
I've been on LinkedIn for a number of years, but I think that in recent years, the customers are more active on LinkedIn. So I would say probably over the last 5 years or so, I've been leveraging LinkedIn more for customer interfacing. I've been using it for years for talking with industry, but with government customers, I'd probably say over the last 5 years.
Cool. Yeah, that would track. I mean, I do a census of feds on LinkedIn every year, and the number keeps growing, and the number of company pages for federal offices keeps growing as well. So I see an increased activity level as well. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on the Federal News Network. I'm here with Jennifer Namvar, CEO of the Peerless Group. You can find her at choosepeerless.com, and you can find her on LinkedIn. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on the Federal News Network. I'm Mark Amtower. Again, I'm here with Jennifer Namvar of the Peerless Group. The next point on your cheat sheet is corporate capabilities to win. Please explain.
Yeah, I think this one is pretty fundamental. So you have to do a gap analysis of your capabilities against the statement of work when you first get started to assess whether or not this is the type of work that your company has got Quelzin, and if you have gaps, then you need to, that's what drives your teaming strategy. You need to find teammates that can fill those gaps.
Can you take a little deeper dive on that and draw? I know you've got a history of this stuff. So when you're reaching out to partners, I mean, besides filling the gap, what else are you looking for there?
Yeah. Relationships would be one. Like, it's all about the customer relationship. And if the customer knows you, and if you want, you know, the customer and you understand what they're really looking for, that's a really important gap to fill as well. You need to take a look at past performance, whether it's recent enough that you can use it in the proposal. Maybe you've got corporate capabilities, but it's dated, so you can still talk about it in your proposal, but you need to find a teammate that's got more recent past performance, for example. What else would I be looking at from a potential teaming partner? Filling socioeconomic goals, so small business subcontracting goals. And then, you know, lastly, I think, are they able to help us win the proposal? What are they willing to provide in terms of resources? So those are some of the corporate capabilities. And I would also say that, you know, you also have to look at your competition when you're assessing your own corporate capabilities. Maybe you've got corporate capabilities, but they're very similar to your competition. So in that case, you have to look at other ways to discriminate.
Okay. So what kind of points of differentiation can come into play here?
Yes. So it really depends on the opportunity, but some of the areas, it really is driven by the customer's hot buttons. So for example, the customer may want things to be more cost efficient. So maybe your solution has got some efficiencies included in it that would make their operation much more cost efficient. Maybe they want to change their business model, for example, and you've got some experience in different ways of delivering the services. So there's a variety of things, but it really all boils down to, do you know the customer, what it is they're really looking for? And if you met with them and they know you, you're more likely to have that information. Usually you can't just get it from going to an AFSIA breakfast and listening to them talk. You need to actually meet with them one-on-one.
Cool. I love the way you've laid out this because it obviously is sequential. So the next item would be customer intelligence. And, you know, the whole idea of understanding that aspect is, you know, there's a lot of public information on the customer, but there's a lot of non-public information on the customer. How do you accumulate and leverage the customer intelligence?
Right. So you have to talk to a variety of people to triangulate who's actually involved in the opportunity. So there's different types of buyers. There's the contract shop. There is the user of the contract, you know, who it's ultimately being delivered to. There's the influencers. So those people in the organization that are listened to and can make a difference in the requirements. There's the evaluators of the proposal that you want to really be speaking to. So you can talk to the customer directly and try to triangulate that information. You can also talk to consultants or other contractors that are in that agency that may have some insight. You can look at who was involved the last time it was competed, if it's not a new requirement. So there's a variety of different ways to find out. And sometimes you don't have perfect knowledge. You need to make an educated guess on who you think it is. But you do need to do that exercise, find out as much as you can about all the different players that are involved in this opportunity so that you make sure that your proposal is speaking to them. And the better idea you have of who is evaluating, the more likely you are to hit the right hot buttons in your proposal.
Okay. So in order of priority, is the contracting officer going to be more important than the program manager or the program staff? Is there a food chain to be followed here? Who's at the top?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's agency specific, but I would say that the evaluators would be at the top, the source selection eval board. And the contracting officer, in terms of the acquisition strategy, is important to get them involved too. But I would say the evaluators are probably where you want to focus your pain points on. And then early on, you know, in that shaping period, you want to talk to the people who are using the contract and make sure that you have their buy-in for your shaping suggestions and ideas. And then loop around back to the contracting officer, the procurement organization, in terms of providing suggestions on the acquisition strategy.
Okay. Do you ever find the program managers on the eval committee?
Sometimes they are, and sometimes they're not. It depends on the agency.
Okay. Now, is there a significant difference between the DOD and the civilian on this, or is the process roughly the same?
I would say the process is roughly the same in DOD and civilian. There might be some variances, but in terms of the process, yeah, I think it's roughly the same. Some agencies may have nuances. Like, for example, NASA might have some nuances in terms of they publish a lot of their information on their source selection decision and the strengths and weaknesses. So they're very transparent. GSA FedSim is very transparent in terms of their communication with industry. They have their first Fridays every month where they communicate all the different opportunities that they're managing and the timing of where they are in their process. So they've got a different process, you know, it varies. And then, so there are definitely some nuances and things like that. So it's really important to understand your customer and how they buy.
Okay, cool. I want to go back. I mean, the next point kind of goes back to what I said about speaking at APMP, the customer doesn't know us. So mm-hmm. Your next point is solid customer relationships. I've seen companies selected as subs because their relationships are stronger with a particular unit within the client than the prime. So talk to me about having, building, and acquiring those relationships.
Right. So a lot of times you have to make an investment in an agency and developing those relationships, whether it's hiring someone that really knows some of the key players in that agency, or hiring a consultant that knows those key players, or to some extent, you know, growing that relationship yourself too. You've got no one individual knows everyone in an agency. And I see that a lot of companies seem to have some expectations that one person is going to be the panacea and they know everyone in the agency. And that's just not true. So you do have to build off of the relationships that you do have and understand that government customers are changing all the time. So you have to do kind of a customer map of, you know, who is in what role and what position they're playing. Who are they, influencers now? Are they evaluators? Are they decision makers? Things like that. Are they neutral toward us? Do they know us? Are we meeting with them frequently enough? What are our touch points into that customer?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the ways that I use LinkedIn for my clients is, you know, taking a deep dive into the staff of a particular agency, seeing who's been there, you know, how long and what their migration up the food chain is. Oftentimes they aren't updating their profile. So you don't know how often they get a new job title, new responsibilities, but sometimes you do. How key is that to your relationship grid?
Yeah, I think it's important to stay on top of who who's getting promoted, who is moving on to other organizations, you know, who's retiring, who's an up-and-comer. And all that information is very valuable because you might have a great relationship with someone, but then they retire. And so,
then you hire them.
Yeah, then you hire them, hopefully.
Okay. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on the Federal News Network. Jennifer and I will return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on the Federal News Network. I'm here with Jennifer Namvar, CEO of the Peerless Group. You can find her at choosepeerless.com or you can find her on LinkedIn. I suggest you do so. And check out our website for some pretty interesting information on the capture process, which we're actually talking about right now. So the next step in the in the capture cheat sheet, Jennifer, is building the dream team. What is a dream team?
Well, it's a team that is going to differentiate your proposal from the next guy's proposal. And, you know, don't get me wrong, like the prime is really the, you know, the prime for a reason. But you can bring on teammates that can significantly help increase your PWin. And that's a good question for anyone you're vetting to bring onto your team is, how will you help me increase my PWin? And it could be because they have, like we were talking about earlier, they have special relationships with the customer. They're well-liked by the customer. It could be that they've got past performance that you don't have. Or it could be that they're willing to commit resources to helping you win your proposal and write sections of your proposal, or they've got really good reviewers for the proposal. It could be that they've got a capability that you just don't have, or they've got a way to help you reduce your overall price. There could be a lot of different reasons, but you really need to think through your teaming strategy holistically. And I see a lot of companies kind of default into going with who they know, but it's really important to be strategic about your teaming.
Okay. If somebody intuits that your company is going after a particular bid, how are you vetting those who approach you to be part of the team? Or if there's still chinks in the armor, how do you go out and find somebody new to fill those gaps?
Yes, we usually put a pretty comprehensive data call together to start out with, and that shows the first level of commitment that the company is willing to put together a data call response and spend a little bit of time thoughtfully preparing that. And then after that, we can have a discussion based on that to dive a little bit deeper into what they bring to the table.
Okay, cool. Next topic is one of my favorites because it just goes way, way back. Actually, it goes back to Sun Tzu in The Art of War. Competitive intelligence.
Yes. And the question is, what do we need to be gathering? And I think the sooner you can start with assembling data about the competition, when you start your journey, the better. You can start understanding who, you know, researching for one thing. There's a lot of available information that you can do research on. But researching your competition, you know, what contracts they're going after or that they have, what their quals are, what they've gone head to head against you, and kind of taking some notes after the fact, and you know, whether it's a win or it's a loss, and what the final price was, etc. So in the competition, who works there, who are their capture and BD folks that are chasing these, understanding the strengths and weaknesses of your competition and their likely win strategy. You know, you might want to do a black hat on that. How we think that they'll price it. What do you think their pricing strategy will be? Who are they going to be teaming with? All these things you want to try to understand to the best of your ability. Even if you don't have all the information, you can at least get together and have a mini black hat or something and try to have strategize on how you think they might behave. That's better than doing nothing at all.
Okay. What are some of the sources you use for the competitive intel outside of, you know, the obvious like FPDS?
Right. Well, there's a lot of subscription services like the GovWin, Bloomberg, things like that, where you can find some information. There's USA Spending. We talked about FPDS. There's websites. There are, you know, some of the industry trade journals like a Washington Technology or something like that. We can read what they're doing in a variety of different from a variety of different sources. And of course, LinkedIn as well. If you follow the company or if you follow people in the company, they'll often announce when they've won something, or even if you look at profiles, you can find out Like if you find out who the incumbents are, you can sometimes they'll say in their profile whether or not, you know, like how many people are on the contract or something like that, you know, so you get some intel that way. There's a lot of different sources.
Okay. Have you started leveraging podcasts to get some of that information? Jason Miller at Federal News Network has a show that's been running for quite some time called Ask the CIO. And he asks some, they're always, you know, senior feds, right? But he asks some very pertinent questions and some hard questions of these people. Would that come into play here as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. I haven't leveraged that one as much. I do have that podcast on my list of podcasts that I subscribe to, but I would have to specifically look and think of specifically looking for it. But yeah, that's a good one as well.
Lord knows there's at least 100 podcasts focused on the government market, and a lot of those are focused on, you know, winning business for large, medium, small, etc. So your only issue there is how much listening time do you have, and can you find the right guest who's going to share real information? But you know, like this show, I've been doing it for a while, but I don't get into the nitty-gritty of winning contracts. So it'll give you good overview, but not necessarily the information you need to win. Let's talk a little bit then about the resources to bid the RFP.
Yeah, it's something that a lot of companies don't consider, especially when they're bidding on everything. And they are, some companies make the mistake of not ever wanting to no bid because they're afraid of, it's fear of missing out, FOMO. But there are definite resources involved in any opportunity that you go after. You need to consider whether you've got the right resources, whether it's, you know, a technical writer or proposal writer, proposal manager, solution architect, and pricing, all these different folks that you need. And there's always an opportunity cost. If you're going to go after one opportunity, then you're taking them away from another. So it's important to consider the big picture, and not just looking at an opportunity one at a time.
I think it's the smaller companies that suffer more of the FOMO that you talk about, because I've had clients where literally every week I've had a meeting postponed because he's bidding on another contract, or he's got two bids to get out. And, you know, I don't know what the win rate is, but it's not very high. Mm-hmm. How do you get granular with those people and convince them not to bid on everything that they see in a generic NAICS code?
Right. That's a long conversation, but one way I do it is actually using this assessment that we're kind of talking about, the 11 points, and doing a color coding and scoring the opportunity. I don't get it. I don't have to go deep at this stage where they're looking at something that they're not necessarily prepared to bid on for a number of reasons, including their resources. But you can give them a red, yellow, or green score against each of these 11 points and say with a short rationale of why they're red or yellow. And sometimes that's enough to get them to really look closer at it. But usually you have to spend a few more hours putting together a deck, slide deck, that explains, you know, some of the opportunity fundamentals, to, you know, including the assessment, who we think we're, how well we know the customer, you know, how well we know the competition, etc. So,
okay, cool. We're going to take our last break. We'll wrap up right after this. I'm here with Jennifer Namvar of the Peerless Group, and we'll return in just a moment. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on the Federal News Network. I'm here today with Jennifer Namvar, the CEO of Peerless Group. Again, you can find her at choosepeerless.com, or you can find her on LinkedIn. And again, I suggest that you do so. So we have a couple of topics left. Let's start with the developing the winning solution.
Yes. And I see a lot of companies fall into the trap of not having their solution baked enough before the RFP comes out. And, you know, I get it that you might not know what the requirements are, but you've got to do everything in your power to prepare for that proposal. And so that means solutioning early. And you got to focus on not just the technical piece, but also the management, staffing, personnel, past performance, et cetera, anything that you think is going to be included. So that means doing some research on the previous requirements, if there were any, and then coming up with starting to do strategy sessions with your subject matter experts or your solution architects on approaches and methodologies and tools to answer the requirements.
Okay. Any other aspects you want to touch on right now?
I would say you should do frequent solution reviews at different stages in your capture to ensure that your solution is progressing, and also vet the solution with the customer if you to the greatest extent possible, so you can get buy-in and they're not looking at it for the first time in your proposal. You want to try to get that buy-in in the capture phase.
Okay, so can you structure a one-on-one or a virtual meeting with them for that? How do you go about that?
Yeah, it's actually pretty simple. You reach out to the customer and you say, I'm with blah, 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 and we understand that you're interested in X, Y, and Z, and we wanted to demonstrate our capabilities and wanted to see if you're interested.
Okay, so it's you know, a face-to-face or a virtual when you're sharing, you're opening the kimono, just make sure it's what they want.
Right, but you also want to make sure that you're not just talking at them, and you need to practice for these kinds of customer interactions and be prepared with a lot of questions. You want it to be back and forth, not just you vomiting out your solution and your capabilities without getting any info back from the client. Should be an exchange.
Listening skills would be a priority here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So on those lines, you know, how open, I mean, it's going to vary, I'm sure, but how open can they be to you when they like kind of the direction you're going in?
Oh, very. They can be very open, and they can definitely, if you've got good questions and you've really done your homework and, you know, you've got to go to the right person with the right type of conversation. You know, so if you've done your homework, you know which solutions to talk to about with which customers. And they can definitely provide you feedback that can directionally change where you're going with your solution, depending on the level of your relationship. Now, if you don't have a relationship, this becomes much harder.
Yeah, I would say damn near impossible, but maybe not, who knows. So let's migrate to the pricing strategy and price to win.
Sure. So there usually so there's a couple things. The pricing price to win kind of goes hand in hand with your competitive intelligence and your customer understanding. So the better you understand the way your customer buys, like are they a best value customer? How have they awarded previous proposals? Have they awarded it to the lowest bidder? Have they awarded it to the middle of the road, the highest bidder, the highest technical? Like, how do they evaluate and award contracts? Understanding that's really important. It's also important to understand who's competing against you, whether and know how they bid, because some companies are notorious for bidding low, bidding as low as possible so they can win the contract. And some companies are notorious for maybe they've got different cost centers. You know, some of them are they can get to a lower number because they're using a different cost center or what have you. some companies are known for really creative pricing strategies. You know, they'll, for example, they'll bid it really low, but then when they win it, they'll, you know, do a bunch of change orders to, you know, make themselves whole again. And that's how they win. So understanding the competition is important. And that's what allows you to do the price to win. And then the pricing from a pricing strategy perspective is once you understand kind of where you need to be from a pricing perspective, you start to think about how you can achieve your strategy by what do you need to do? What tactics do you need to employ to do that? Do you need to, you know, for example, only use junior labor categories, or do you need to have fewer people but use more senior labor categories, or do you need to bid at different locations, for example, that are lower cost? There's a lot of different strategies, and it depends on the contract requirements which ones you can leverage.
Okay, cool. So the final topic that you have on your cheat sheet is obviously among the most important. That's leadership buy-in.
Yes. And that's one that's forgotten because capture management occurs both inside of the company and outside of the company. So the outside of the company piece is, you know, understanding your customer and your competition and all that stuff. Inside of the company is communicating with the leaders in your company that are providing the resources for you to bid and communicating progress, communicating why you think you can win it, and getting their buy-in so that you can continue to pursue that opportunity. Because if they don't have faith that you're able to win it, they're going to pull the plug and you're not going to be allowed to bid anymore. So getting that buy-in is essential for capture and managers. It shouldn't be ignored because things can go sideways quickly, particularly in larger organizations where it's very political and there's a lot of people vying for the same resources so they can go after opportunities.
Yeah. I have seen instances, and I know you've seen more, where the company leadership says, I want to go after this contract. Mm-hmm. You know, when it becomes pretty much obvious that it's not tenable, at what point do you share that particular information, particularly with a CEO that really, really wants this gig?
You share that information as quickly as possible. Someone once told me that bad news is not like a fine wine. It does not age well. So you want to share bad news sooner rather than later. And if that leader decides to still pursue something, even after you've provided all of the information that indicates why you shouldn't, that is their call. And if they make that call, as long as you've communicated why, what some of the challenges are, you've done your job. So they can't go to you and say, oh, you wasted X amount of BMP going after this and we weren't able to win it. You can say, well, I did brief you on this date, or I sent these emails that said these things happened that changed the course of the opportunity and made it and reduced our PWIN.
Cool. All right. Any final thoughts, Jennifer?
Yeah. I mean, I guess my final thought is that, I mean, capture management is a really interesting and challenging career. So if people are thinking about going into it, I highly encourage it. It can be very lucrative as well. And then, you know, for people that want to improve their capture management within their organization, maybe they're not doing capture at all, or maybe they're just not doing it well, or maybe it needs their capture process needs to be refined. I would just encourage them to continue to challenge themselves to improve it, because there will be a payoff, direct payoff from doing it with the investments. You'll notice that some of the largest prime contractors and systems integrators in our space are the ones that invest most heavily in capture. And that's no coincidence. So it works. And if you want to be, if you aspire to be a company like those top 10 government contractors, then you've got to invest in doing it and follow the process.
Very cool. Great advice. Thank you for joining me today. Podcasting is not my day job. I operate at the intersection of thought leadership, content, and LinkedIn. I help companies and individuals build subject matter expert positions in the federal market to build stronger pipelines. If you'd like to discuss this, drop me a line at markamtower@gmail.com or send me an email through LinkedIn. And please share this podcast with people who will benefit and like it on the podcast platform of your choice. And finally, thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Network. Tune in Mondays at noon or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.